Each time the Oni's club hit the barrier outside, one of them would flinch, clenching his jaw or pressing his lips together. I saw Denga sitting behind Master Isao, a stream of red running from his nose as he fought to maintain the barrier. His eyebrows twitched with every blow, and his jaw was set, even as blood dripped from his chin to spatter his hands. As I forced myself back to human form, Master Isao's eyes opened to gaze right at me. Smiling, as if this meeting was over the dinner table and I had come in late, he raised a hand and beckoned me forward.
"Ah, there you are, Yumeko-chan. I've been waiting for you."
"Master Isao!" I flung myself beside him. "What are we to do? The Oni is almost through the barrier. How will we escape?"
"There is no escape,"
Master Isao said calmly, making my heart plummet.
"Not for us. We have done our duty. But you, Yumeko-chan, you must continue it."
Horrified, I stared at him. I don't understand, Master Isao," I whispered. "What do you mean, I must continue it? How?" I trailed off as the wizened monk reached into the sleeve of his robe and drew something into the light. A simple case made of dark, lacquered wood, a red silk ribbon wrapped around the cylinder. I gasped as he held it up. "Is that..."
"Take it, Yumeko-chan," Master Isao ordered and held it out to me. "It must not fall into the hands of demons. You must keep it safe at all costs."
Another boom rattled the beams overhead, and one of the monks behind us drew in a sharp breath. Master Isao's gaze never wavered from mine.
"Take the scroll," he said again, "and leave this place. Run, and don't look back."
Frantically, I shook my head. "I can't," I whispered as my eyes grew hot, tears welling in the corners. "I can't leave you. Where will I go? I don't know anything about the outside world. How can I keep the scroll safe?"
"Fox girl."
Master Isao's voice was firm, and I blinked at him in shock. Though the other monks often use that phrase, he never called me anything related to my true nature.
"Listen to me. There is something I have not told you, a piece of your past I must reveal. When you first came to us in the fish basket with a note pinned to your blanket..."
He paused, a shadow of regret passing through his eyes, so quick I might have imagined it.
"I have told you most of what the letter said," Master Isao continued, "but not all. The part that you have not heard is this."
His words echoed strangely in my head, like they were coming from a great distance away. "Humble monks, I beg you to be patient and to not judge, for I have seen a vision of the future. In this vision, I have seen blood and flames and death, demons shrieking and rivers of bones, and the world grows dark with fear. But a single fox stands above it all, untouched, a great dragon cast in her shadow. Her name is Yumeko, child of dreams, for she is our hope against the coming darkness." My insides turned to ice. Master Isao smiled gently and raised the scroll once more.
"So you see, Yumeko-chan," he said, "our fate was already foretold. Whoever left you at the gates of the temple knew this was coming, and that you would play a part in the tale, the fourth coming of the dragon."
Numb, I stared at him, not really comprehending what he just told me. A thud echoed through the hall, and with a gasp, one of the monks behind us collapsed, holding his head.
For the first time, a bead of sweat appeared on Master Isao's forehead and ran down his face. I shook myself out of my trance and clutched at his sleeve.
Why?
I whispered.
I'm not ready. Why does it have to be me?
His withered hand closed over mine.
Because you are the only one who can do this. Listen carefully, Yumeko-chan.
Master Isao squeezed my hand, and the strength in his fingers calmed me somewhat.
We are not alone in our mission, nor are we the only guardians. There is another temple, another order that guards a piece of the scroll. You must go to them. Warn them of what happened here. They will protect you and the dragon's prayer. It is their sacred duty to do so.
Where are they?
I cannot tell you, Master Isao said. I do not know myself. It is a legendary place of myth and rumor, and its location has been lost to the ages. I know only its name, the Steel Feather Temple, and that it is somewhere very far from here. But, he added before I could protest in despair, there is one who knows the location of the temple. You must travel to Kinhagen Toshi, the capital city in the center of the Sunlands. Within the city is the Hayate Shrine. Go there and ask for the head priest, Master Jiro. He can tell you the location of the Steel Feather Temple.
Master!
Tears were running down my cheeks. My stomach was curling around itself in both terror and anguish.
I can't! I can't do it alone!
You can,
Master Isao said firmly, and held up the scroll once more.
You must. This is my last request. Take the scroll to the Steel Feather Temple. Warn them of what transpired here, that someone wishes to bring the pieces of the dragon's scroll together once more. Do not let our deaths be in vain.
Another crash sounded outside, and he closed his eyes.
Promise me, Yumeko-chan. You must protect the scroll. The fate of this land depends on it.
With shaking hands, I reached out and took the scroll, wrapping trembling fingers around the case. It was surprisingly light in my palm.
I promise, I whispered. I swear I'll find the Steel Feather Temple, warn the other monks, and protect the scroll. I won't fail you.
He smiled.
Take this as well, he said, and pressed a tanto, a short, straight dagger, into my palm. It will come in handy when defending yourself with words and cunning is not enough. And this...
He draped a simple furoshiki, a wrapping cloth used for transporting clothes, gifts, or other possessions, around my shoulders.
To hide your burden from the rest of the world. Now, go.
He nodded toward the statue.
Don't worry about us, and don't cry. We will meet again, Yumeko-chan, in the Pure Lands or in another life.
With a mighty crash that shook the entire hall, the barriers shattered. Monks gasped or cried out, hands going to their heads, and the floor trembled as the huge Oni stepped into the room, a flood of demons behind him.
Go, Yumeko-chan,
Master Isao said, and his voice was icy. Stone-faced, he rose and stepped toward the hulking thing in the doorway.
Feeling like a coward, I skittered half behind the Jade Prophet, knowing I had to leave, but unable to tear my eyes away. Master Isao and the others waited calmly as the shadow of the demon grew larger, its eyes glowing like red coals against the dark. The Oni smiled as he entered the hall, ducking his massive head as he stepped into the room, looming to a terrifying height. He was so large that his horns nearly scraped the ceiling.
"Monks of the Silent Winds Temple," he rumbled, his terrible voice making the air shiver. "My name is Yaburama, fourth demon general of Jikoku, and I have come for the Dragon Scroll."
He raised his tetsubo and swung it in his palm with a meaty thump as the small demons hissed and chortled gleefully behind him, waiting for the signal to attack.
"Give me what I have come for, and perhaps I will make your deaths painless."
"Abomination!"
Denga's voice rang over the snarls and cackles of the demon horde. Fearlessly, he strode forward until he was only a few yards away from the mountain of an Oni.
"We will never relinquish the scroll to such evil. You are not welcome here. By the Jade Prophet, be gone, and take your minions with you."
The Oni cocked his head. Abruptly, he swung his club, shockingly fast, striking Denga in the side and smashing him into a pillar. The monk hit the beam with a sickening crack and crumpled to the floor, blood streaming from his nose and mouth, eyes staring sightlessly ahead. I bit my lip to stifle a shriek, and the Oni curled a lip.
"Your Jade Prophet means nothing to me," he commented, as the demons shrieked with laughter and swarmed into the room.
With cries of fury and outrage, the monks surged forward, meeting the demons in the center of the hall. They were unarmed, and their opponents wielded blades and spears as well as claws and teeth. But the monks were far from defenseless. Ki energy pulsed, turning fists into hammers and feet into weapons of destruction. A demon's skull imploded after Nitoru kicked it in the head, spraying demon blood everywhere before it writhed into crimson-black smoke and disappeared. A trio of demons swarmed Satoshi, who caught a spear thrust at him, wrenched it out of the demon's grasp, and plunged it through its gaping mouth. But he didn't see the danger behind him until a second demon sank a kamisickle deep into his leg. Satoshi staggered and dropped to a knee, and the monsters piled on him, dragging him to the floor.
"Yumeko!"
Master Isao's voice rang in my head, though the master of the Silent Winds Temple strode right for the center of the room, ki energy crackling around him, where the terrible Oni waited.
"Go now."
I turned toward the hole in the floor and prepared to shift into fox form, but a bulbous blue head poked up between the boards and a demon clawed itself out of the hole, followed by two friends. When they saw me, they hissed and raised their spears, and I hastily backed up.
Jinke, help me, I was trapped. I couldn't go forward with the trio blocking the hole, and I couldn't go back into the room where the battle between monks and demons raged.
The din was deafening, screams and howls mingling with flashes of ki, flying bodies, and blood. As the trio of demons grinned evilly and tensed, I raised my arm and a ball of blue-white foxfire flared to life in my palm. The blue demon glanced at the ghostly flames and sneered, making my heart sink. Apparently, a ball of kitsune-bi to the face wasn't going to work a second time. With a roar, the massive bulk of the Oni flew backward and crashed into the statue of the Jade Prophet, knocking her off her base. The statue teetered for a moment, giving me just enough time to scramble away before toppling through the wall with a deafening crash of wood and stone.
The three Amanjaku were buried under the rubble, and a warm, smoke-scented breeze rushed into the hall from the hole it left behind. I cringed, ducking behind one of the pillars lining the room, as the Oni shook its head and looked up at Master Isao, who stood in the center of the room. The monk was breathing hard, blood running down his face from beneath his hat, both palms raised. A deep growl came from the Oni, sitting against the ruined statue.
"You hit hard for a mortal,"
the monster rumbled, getting to its feet.
"Well done, but it will not save you. The Amanjaku are tearing your brothers apart as we speak. No one is left."
He craned his neck from side to side, rolled his shoulders forward, and raised his club.
"It is time to end these games. Let us see if you have the key to do that again."
The Oni lunged with a roar. As he barreled forward, raising his club high overhead, Master Isao's calm gaze flicked to me. In the moment our gazes met, he smiled.
"Go, Yumeko-chan," whispered his voice in my head, gentle and serene. "Run."
This time, I didn't wait to see what happened, if the terrible crash from the Oni's club struck home or not. I whirled and sprinted through the hole left from the fallen prophet, scrambling over splintered beams and broken jade, whispering an apology as I stepped over a shattered green arm. Then I was outside, and the air was hot and choking. Blinded by tears, I tripped over a plank and skinned my hands when I fell, and the lacquered scroll case rolled away from me, gleaming in the firelight. My blood chilled. Snatching it up, I half ran, half stumbled into the gardens, past the pond full of dead, floating carp, to the old maple tree leaning against the wall. After quickly tucking the scroll into the furoshiki and the chanto into my obi, I pulled myself up by the gnarled branches, wondering how the once familiar act could feel so strange and surreal. I wouldn't be doing this ever again. At the top of the wall, I spared one final look back at my home, the temple I'd lived in all my life, and felt a lump rise to my throat. The pagoda was now a skeletal ruin engulfed by flames, and the fire had spread to the other buildings, including the main hall. I could make out only the roof over the tops of the trees, but a stray ember on one corner had turned into a flame, which would quickly spread and consume the wooden building until there was nothing left. I didn't dare imagine what was happening inside, the lives that were lost, the monks who stood bravely against a horde of demons. Everyone I'd ever known, Jin, Satoshi, Nitoru, Denga, Master Isao, and all the rest, they were gone. They'd gone willingly to their deaths, all to protect the scroll. A tiny globe of light, pale against the smoke and darkness, rose from the roof of the burning hall. It was joined by another, and then another, until there were more than a dozen glowing orbs rising slowly into the air and leaving trails of light behind them. My throat closed up, and fresh tears streamed down my cheeks. Not one of the spheres of light hesitated or stayed near the temple. All rose steadily toward the stars. They had no regrets, no lingering sorrows or thoughts of vengeance, nothing that tied them to this world. They were free. Deep inside my chest, a tiny blue-white flame of anger flickered, burning away the despair, and I breathed deep to banish the tears. "I won't fail," I promised as the lights drifted slowly away toward Meido or the Pure Lands or wherever they were headed. If this is truly my destiny, then I'll give it my all. Don't worry, Master Isao. Everyone, I'll find the Steel Feather Temple and protect the scroll, I promise."
My words had no effect on the rapidly fading lights. They continued rising into the sky until they were no larger than the stars themselves and disappeared. I blinked rapidly. Safe journey, everyone. May we meet again, in this life or the next. A hiss in the gardens drew my attention. Looking down, I met the crimson eyes of a demon, who jerked up as he saw me as well. As it gave a shrill cry of alarm and raised its weapon, I dropped to the ground outside the wall and sprinted into the forest.
7. An unexpected proposal. The path had disappeared. I hesitated in the shadows of the forest, listening, my hand curled around my sword hilt. Sometime during my dash up the mountain, the trail I'd been following had either vanished or I'd lost it somehow, for uninterrupted woods surrounded me, dark and thick. It wasn't terribly problematic. I could still hear the roar of a conflagration, and the breeze through the branches carried the scent of smoke and blood. I was going in the right direction. I feared what I would find when I got there. There was a rustle in the bushes ahead, and Kamigoroshi gave a warning pulse, just as something exploded from the darkness and lunged at me. My blade cleared its sheath in an instant, whipping up toward my attacker's face. It, she, yelped and skidded to a halt as my brain caught up to my reflexes. Hakaemono roared, goading me to continue the motion, to bathe the steel in blood. I wrenched myself from the howling bloodlust and forced my hands to stop. The blade froze an inch from her neck. Panting, I looked across the glowing edge of the sword into the face and wide black eyes of a girl. She was my age, perhaps a bit younger, small, petite, wearing a short crimson robe patterned with white swirls. Her black hair hung loose around her shoulders and down her back, and her large, dark eyes, peering up at me, were round with shock. For a moment, we stared at each other, bathed in the faint purple light of Kamigoroshi. Her face was dirty, smudged with ash and grime, and she was breathing hard, as if she had been fleeing the fire with the rest of the wildlife. Then there was a snap in the trees behind her, and I realized why she'd been running. "Get back!" I said, and shoved her behind me, as an Amanjaku leaped through the bushes with a howl, a sickle raised over its head. I smacked the curved blade aside and slashed Kamigoroshi across its face, making it shriek and reel away. More demons swarmed from the bushes, stabbing and hacking wildly as they rushed forward. They died on my sword as I carved limbs from bodies and heads from torsos, black demon blood arcing into the air. Hakaemono reveled in their deaths, but I kept myself detached from the demon's rage. I was the hand that wielded Kamigoroshi, nothing more. I felt nothing as I sent the creatures back to Jigoku. When the last demon fell, I flicked streaming blood from my sword, sheathed Kamigoroshi despite the protests in my mind, and looked around for the girl. She peered from behind a tree trunk, watching me with big dark eyes. Surprised, I turned to face her fully. I had half expected her to be gone, fleeing the forest while the demons were busy attacking me. I caught the glint of metal in her hand and saw the hilt of a tanto clutched in her fist. Whether it was meant for me or the demons, I wasn't certain.
"Merciful Jinke," she whispered, sounding breathless.
Her eyes shone as she gazed around at the fading tendrils of darkness on the wind.
"You... that was..."
Blinking, she looked up at me, her expression caught between awe and fear.
"Who are you?"
"Nothing. Nobody. A shadow on the wall, empty and unimportant." I turned away, toward the sound of distant flames. "Run," I told the girl, not looking back. "Get out of here. Go to the village at the bottom of the mountain. You should be safe there."
Wait! She cried as I started forward. I paused, but did not turn back. You can't go that way, she said, and I heard her emerge from behind the tree. It's too dangerous. There are more demons, a whole horde of them, and there's an oni. An oni? My eyes narrowed. Even as Hakaemono gave the strongest flare of excitement I had ever felt from it. I had been killing dangerous yokai for the Shadow Clan since I was 13, the newest in a long line of kage demon slayers to wield kamigoroshi, but I had never faced a real oni. From what my sensei had told me, the greatest demons of Jigoku were nothing like the monsters I'd fought before. Tough, savage, and virtually unstoppable, able to regenerate wounds, broken bones, even severed limbs at an astonishing rate. They were difficult to defeat, even with kamigoroshi. In the past, more than one demon slayer who had gone to fight an oni had not survived the battle. Fortunately, oni encounters were rare, as summoning one from Jigoku and binding the savage demon to your will required incredible power. Unfortunately, it meant that whomever had sent an oni here to this forest was likely after the same thing I was. Lady Hanshul hadn't told me why she wanted this particular scroll, nor was it my place to ask. My mission was to retrieve the scroll, no matter what obstacles stood in my way. "This oni," I asked the girl, whose gaze I could still feel on my back. "Where is it?"
"The temple," she replied, and her voice came out slightly choked. "At the top of the mountain. It killed everyone there and set the whole place on fire. Nothing is left."
My spirits sank. If the demons had attacked and destroyed the temple, then the scroll was already gone. Destroyed or in the hands of the oni. Setting my jaw, I headed into the trees. I had to see if the scroll was still there, if I could save it. And if the oni did indeed possess the scroll, I would challenge the demon and take it back. Or die trying.
Baka!
Something grabbed the hem of my jacket, tugging me to a halt. I spun, barely stopping myself from drawing kamigoroshi and slicing my assailant in half.
Didn't you hear me?
The girl asked, her dark gaze now wide with fear.
There's an army of demons and an oni that way. If you go to the temple, they'll kill you, like they did everyone else.
Her eyes watered, moisture spilling down one cheek. I suddenly understood.
You came from the temple, I stated quietly. You saw everything.
She nodded, swiping a dirty sleeve across her face.
Everyone died, she whispered. I barely got away. My master sacrificed himself so that I could escape. He fought the oni himself, though he knew it was going to kill him.
What were the demons after? I asked, watching her closely. Perhaps if she had come from the temple, she knew about the scroll or where it was located. Why did they attack? I pressed. Did they take anything?
For just a moment, she hesitated. Her cheeks paled, and she looked up at me with those dark eyes. For some reason, my skin prickled, and I fought the urge to look away.
I don't know, she admitted. I don't know why they came or what they wanted. I just know my temple is gone, and demons killed everyone I've ever cared for. And if you go up there now, you'll die too.
She paused again, then held out her hand as if coming to a decision.
Come with me, she said to my surprise, before the demons find us. I can't. I don't want to be alone right now. We can head to the village and figure out what to do from there.
No, I stepped back, away from her. You can keep running. Get out of the forest. But I have business at the temple, something I must confirm.
What? She stared at me in disbelief as I turned and began walking away. You can't be serious. What is so important that you would risk your head getting crushed by an oni? Wait! Footsteps shuffled after mine. I turned once more and raised Kamigoroshi, making her stumble to a halt. Don't follow me, I warned, as her gaze fell to the blade. Go to the village. Warn them about the attack. Forget what you saw here. Sheathing the sword, I headed into the darkness toward the temple and the battle that awaited me at the top. What happens now isn't your concern. The scroll isn't there anymore. I stopped. Slowly, I turned around. The girl stood in the same place, watching me with a weary, almost defiant expression, her jaw set. The scroll, she repeated, so there would be no doubt. You won't find it. It's no longer at the temple. Where is it? She hesitated. Drawing my sword, I walked toward her. Her face paled, and she backed away, but it hit a tree after a few steps. I don't know, she began, and froze as I placed the edge of Kamigoroshi against her neck. Wait, please! You don't understand. Where is the scroll? I asked again, stepping close. Tell me, or I'll kill you. It's gone, the girl burst out. It's not here anymore. Master Isao, he sensed the demons coming. He knew they wanted the scroll, so he sent it away. A few days ago. Where? I don't know. I tilted the blade up so it pressed lightly under her chin, and she gasped. I don't know, she insisted, raising her head to escape the sword. Master Isao didn't tell me where it's located, but I know who does. Who? She paused, her dark eyes flicking to mine over the blade. Again, I felt that odd flutter beneath my skin, reacting to her presence. How do I know he won't kill me if I tell you? I give you my word, I told her. On my honor, if you tell me what I want, I won't kill you. Carefully, she shook her head. I need more than that, samurai, she said, making me frown. A warrior's vow was absolute, his honor preventing any hint of betrayal, and it was an insult to imply otherwise. To a samurai who broke his promise, the shame would be so great that seppuku, ritually killing himself, was the only answer. Of course, I was shinobi, a shadow warrior, and followed a different code than the samurai. We operated in darkness, performing tasks that would make an honorable samurai cringe in horror and revulsion. But the girl didn't know that. She continued to watch me, her head and back pressed to the trunk, chin raised to escape the lethal blade against her throat. I kept a tight hold on the sword, both in my hand and in my mind. For Hakaimono was goading me to kill this insubordinate peasant nobody. You can kill me now, she said, but then you'll never find what you're looking for. I narrowed my eyes, and she shivered under my gaze, seeming to lose courage before taking a deep breath and staring at me again. I have a proposal for you, she announced. So please listen before you decide to cut off my head. The demons will come after me. Once they figure out the scroll isn't here, they'll hunt me down. Right now, the scroll is on its way to another temple, a hidden temple far away. I need to get to that temple to warn the monks of the demon attack. I promised my mentor I would. But you don't know where it is, I pointed out. No, she admitted. I don't. But Master Isao told me the name of the person who does, a priest who lives in Kinhegentoshi. He knows the location of the hidden temple and can tell me where to go. But I don't think I can get there alone. I can't fight a horde of demons by myself. She appraised me, and I realized where this was going. But You kill demons. Quite well, it seems. If you come with me, protect me on the journey, then...
She trailed off, but the implication hung in the air between us, impossible to miss. Then she'll take me to the scroll. I considered. The clan wouldn't be pleased. As the Kage Demon Slayer and the bearer of Kamigoroshi, I wasn't supposed to have prolonged contact with anyone outside of the Shadow Clan. The reasons for this were twofold. The Kage were a family of secrets. Our shinobi were the best in the land and possessed talents unknown to the rest of the world. We were close to the shadows, and the kami touched among us reflected that, speaking the language of darkness and the unknown. The Shadow Clan held their secrets close and would happily kill any outsider who discovered too much. A peasant girl traveling with the Kage Demon Slayer would raise concerns. But the other more pressing reason was me. I was highly discouraged from interacting with outsiders because of the danger I represented, the risk that I could lose myself to the demon in the sword. Emotion was especially dangerous because Hakaemono used it as a gateway into the soul. Rage, fear, uncertainty. The stronger the feeling, the closer the demon came to overwhelming its host. I'd been warned numerous times that if Hakaemono fully took control, there was no going back. I would become a monster, and they would have no choice but to kill me. But I was on a mission for the daimyo of the Shadow Clan, Lady Hansho herself. I'd been sworn to retrieve the scroll and was expected to obey, even if it cost me my life and the lives of those around me. Failure was not an option.
So, the girl ventured, do we have an agreement?
8. Two souls for the road. The stranger was silent, considering. We stood very close, and I could see every detail of his face. The high cheekbones, the full lips, the scar down his forehead and across the bridge of his nose. But his eyes, they were a luminous purple, the deep, brilliant shade of an iris flower, and yet, gazing into them caused a chill to spread across my neck and creep down my back. They were blank, revealing no emotion, showing no compassion, empathy, or understanding. No hint of a soul beneath. I had never been truly afraid of another person until now. Despite even Denga-san's threats, rages, and numerous punishments, I'd known in my heart that the monks of the Silent Winds Temple would never hurt me. But this boy, he might be young with the face of an angel, but there was no mistaking the truth in his eyes. He was a killer. And yet, this soulless killer might be my best chance to reach the Steel Feather Temple alive. The thought made my heart pound wildly, but after watching him slaughter the Amanjaku, seeing how easily he cut them down, an idea had formed in my mind. A wild, risky, probably very dangerous idea. The demons would be hunting me once they figured out the scroll was gone. The Oni could be hunting me, and much as I wanted to avenge Master Isao and the others, I was no match for that abomination. I trembled, feeling a huge, painful knot in the pit of my stomach. It didn't seem real that they were gone. That only this afternoon I was lighting the candles of the main hall and wishing I was somewhere else. I had never been beyond the forest. I didn't know where to go or how to talk to people. My whole life I'd spoken only to monks, kami, and the odd yokai in the woods. I had to take the scroll to the Steel Feather Temple. I'd promised Master Isao I would, but I wasn't sure how to get there or what I would do if I ran into demons. But this human could kill demons.
Quite easily, in fact. He might be as dangerous as the monsters themselves. If he were protecting me, any demon, yokai, or murderous human who wanted the scroll would have to deal with him first. There was just one small problem. He, too, was after the dragon's prayer. Whether he had been sent to retrieve it like the demons or had come of his own volition, the reason didn't matter. I could feel the narrow, lacquered case hidden in the furoshiki tied around my shoulder, and my heart pounded. If he discovered I had the scroll, I would be just as dead as the monsters dissolving in the breeze. I was going to have to be very careful and choose my actions wisely, or my would-be protector would turn on me. Briefly, I had the sobering thought that Master Isao would not have approved of this sham, of me lying to get this boy to get him to accompany me to the Steel Feather Temple. Denga would have certainly seen it as more fox trickery and deception. But I wasn't a warrior. I couldn't chop things to pieces with a sword, and all I knew of the outside world was what the monks had taught me. My temple was gone. My family had been slaughtered by demons before my eyes, and I had been given a near impossible task. Not to mention, there was the notion that I had been left at the Silent Winds Temple for this very moment, to somehow protect the scroll from everything that wanted it. I wasn't certain what to feel about the whole vision thing, but I knew that if I thought about it now, I would bury myself in a deep hole and never come out again. I couldn't do this alone, and I had no one else to help me. As the old tanuki had said just this evening, I was kitsune, yokai, not human. This was what I was good at. I held the stranger's gaze as he thought about my offer, sensing a desperate struggle within him. Finally, he nodded and stepped back from the tree, taking his terrible sword away from my neck. "All right," he said. "If this is the only way to get to the scroll, then I will take you to the capital, and then to the Steel Feather Temple. But..." His eyes narrowed, cold and icy, and he raised his sword so that the moonlight reflected down the length of steel. "If you deceive me or try to run, I will kill you. Understand?" I nodded, ignoring the stab of fear that accompanied the feeling of relief. Not that I had any intentions of sneaking away, but I had no doubt he wasn't making idle threats. With a sigh, the boy finally sheathed his weapon, and the subtle light coming from the blade vanished, plunging us into darkness. "The capital is a few weeks away on foot," he stated, calm and businesslike as he stepped back. "My horse fled earlier this evening, so we'll have to walk, at least until I can find a new one. Are you well enough to travel? Do you have what you need?" "Yes," I replied. Being raised in a temple of ascetic monks, I'd never owned much, and the few possessions I'd had were probably cinders and ashes now. I had my sandals, the clothes on my back, a knife, and a piece of a scroll of ultimate wish-granting power hidden in my furoshiki. That would have to be enough to get by. "I don't suppose you have travel papers, do you?" the boy asked. I blinked. "No. What are travel papers?" "They're..." He shook his head. "Never mind," he murmured, dismissing the matter. "It can't be helped now. We'll deal with the problem if it arises."
"Ano," I added as the human turned away. "What's your name?"
He hesitated a moment, then replied in a low, empty voice, "Kage Tatsumi."
Kage. Kage was the Shadow Clan, a family of secrets and hidden knowledge, according to my studies. It seemed fitting for the dark, cold-eyed boy in front of me.
"I'm Yumeko." I tried to smile, though with his back turned he probably wouldn't see it.
"Thank you for taking me to the capital, Tatsumi-san, and, you know, saving me from the demons."
He didn't give any indication that he'd heard. With a quiet, "Let's go,"
He stepped forward and vanished into the shadows like he was part of the night itself. I glanced once more at the sky, at the smoke and embers still rising over the treetops, marking the end of a way of life. Closing my eyes, I whispered a quick prayer to Jinke, the Kami of Mercy, and Doroshin, the Kami of Roads, for Godspeed and to guide everyone to their final destination, before I turned and followed Kage Tatsumi into the dark.
Part 2. 9. The Lingering Soul. Being a ghost was an exercise in patience. When Suki was still very young, her mother would tell her ghost stories in the flickering candlelight of home. At the end of the day, while Mura Akihito was in his shop, slaving over his newest masterpiece, Suki would sit on a stool as her mother swept or cooked, and listened to tales of beautiful women betrayed or abandoned by their lovers, who pined away until their bodies died but their yearning lived on. In these stories, it was always the women who died of broken hearts, Suki noticed, who took their own lives in grief, or who were brutally murdered and returned for vengeance. Sometimes immoral women became something terrible and unnatural. A greedy woman might grow another mouth in the back of her head that consumed all the food it could find. An unfaithful woman might discover that, while she slept, her neck elongated to incredible lengths as her head roamed around freely, licking up lamp oil and attacking small animals. In the most wicked cases, the woman's grief, jealousy, or rage would turn her into an oni, a hanya, or even a terrible giant serpent. Demons that always met their ends on some great samurai sword. Terrible fates, the soul that had once been Suki mused, floating soundlessly down a narrow castle hallway. Certainly the women who turned into such monsters were grotesque and to be pitied. But right now, she thought she would much rather be a demon. A few yards ahead of her, Lady Satomi sauntered down the narrow corridor of the abandoned castle, parasol swaying, unaware of the soul trailing behind her. After the terrible night of her death, Suki had attempted to follow the woman, but had lost her in the twisting halls of the castle. Alone, the ghost that had been Suki had drifted aimlessly from room to hallway to courtyard, bewildered and confused. She'd been certain that, before she became a ghost, she had been a maid at the Imperial Palace. How she'd come to this dark, abandoned castle was a mystery. The last thing she remembered was delivering a coil of rope to a storehouse in the Imperial Gardens. But this castle was definitely not the Emperor's Golden Palace of the Sun. Everything felt cold, lifeless, abandoned. Even the demons were gone. After feasting on her body, Yaburama and the smaller demons had departed the castle as well. And with no company but the spiders and rats, time had blurred into a bleak, lonely haze. But this evening, Lady Satomi had returned, striding through the halls of the abandoned castle as if she did so every night. Stunned, Suki trailed behind her, keeping out of sight while she pondered what to do. Her first thought, of course, was vengeance. To haunt Satomi relentlessly until she went mad from guilt. But unlike the ghost stories her mother used to tell, where the spirits could curse and even physically harm their victims, Suki's interactions with the world were limited. She had no body. Her insubstantial form passed through everything she touched. If she thought about it, she could manifest as a ghostly version of her old self. But if she lost focus, she would revert to a glowing ball of light. Speaking was difficult and required effort to remember how. And even then, her voice came out faint and breathy. In the stories, some yurei were powerful onryo, grudge spirits whose rage and hate manifested into devastating and sometimes fatal curses. But Suki had no idea how to do that. And even if she did show herself to her murderer, Lady Satomi didn't seem the type to be distressed about the ghost of her former maid. So she followed her, trailing the woman soundlessly through the empty halls, until Satomi pushed open the front doors and stepped into the courtyard again. It was full of demons. Suki froze in midair, trembling, before darting behind a dead bush to peer through the branches. Amanjaku skittered over the stones, snarling and waving crude weapons at each other. In the center, the terrible form of Yaburama towered over the mob, casting them in his shadow. Lady Satomi strode through the mob, ignoring the demons who hissed and cackled at her, face serene as she walked toward the Oni. From Suki's perspective, as she hovered behind a chunk of broken wall, Yaburama seemed to be in a bad mood, baring his teeth at any Amanjaku who got too close. As Satomi approached, a green Amanjaku darted out of her way, and the Oni gave it a savage kick that booted it over the wall. Lady Satomi watched as the demon went sailing away, a bemused look on her face, before looking at Yaburama.
"Well, I could say something about your temper, but at least you're on time tonight."
The woman sniffed, then gave an Amanjaku that had been edging too close to her robes a warning look.
"But sadly, time is waning, and I have much to do. If you would kindly give me the scroll, Yaburama, we can end this unpleasant association, and you can go back to doing whatever it is you demons do until you're summoned. So," she held out a slender white hand, "the dragon scroll, if you would."
The Oni let out a growl.
"I don't have it."
"What?" Lady Satomi dropped her arm, eyes narrowing.
"Do excuse me, Yaburama, but this is the sole reason you were summoned from Jigoku, yes? Why I sent you to that temple of ki using fanatics? Because I thought, surely an Oni like Yaburama would have no trouble with a bunch of bald old men. What do you mean you don't have the scroll?"
"The scroll wasn't at the temple, human."
The Oni glowered down at her.
"I killed every monk there, including the master, and tore the temple apart looking for it. There was no scroll."
"And you're certain you killed everyone?"
Satomi's voice was calm. She could have been asking a maid if she'd looked everywhere for a favorite teacup, not casually discussing the slaughter of an entire temple of monks.
"No acolyte snuck out the back and managed to escape? No monk harnessed their key to a trio of sparrows and flew over the wall?"
"No,"
growled the Oni.
"I killed everyone. There were no survivors."
At this, a pair of smaller demons near the Oni's feet began jumping up and down, chattering in raspy, high-pitched voices. Suki couldn't understand what they were saying, but Yaburama spun around, looking murderous, and grabbed for them. One demon yelped in alarm and fled into the crowd, but the other wasn't fast enough and was snatched up in the Oni's huge claw. It wailed as the monster lifted it off the ground, waving its arms and babbling, until it was at face level. The Oni rumbled at it in a guttural, ominous voice, and the demon squeaked in answer, still squirming helplessly in its grip. With a growl and a flash of fangs, the Oni clenched its fist, crushing the demon inside. Blood shot from its nose and mouth and ran from its ears, before it dissolved into coils of reddish-black smoke that writhed away on the wind. If Suki could have cringed at the display of violence and blood, she would have. But Lady Satomi only looked amused.
"Oh, do let me guess," she said as the Oni opened its fist, letting the last of the smoke dissipate.
Blood stained his claws and fingertips, but he didn't seem to notice.
"In all your murdering and killing and reveling, you let someone slip away through your big, stupid fingers. And now they have the scroll."
The Oni lowered his arm.
"There was a girl,"
he rumbled, sounding reluctant and annoyed at the same time.
The Yamanjaku chased her into the forest, but she managed to escape.
He paused, his face darkening even as his eyes narrowed and his voice dropped to a low, terrifying growl.
With the help of the Kage Demon Slayer.
The Kage Demon Slayer? Suki didn't know that name, but the crowd of small demons went quiet and still, as if the very word terrified them. She wondered what kind of person could scare a horde of maniacal hell demons, and if it was someone she would ever want to encounter. Well, Lady Satomi said, after a moment of brittle silence. Her voice could have frozen the lake in the Emperor's garden and sliced all the fish in half with its edge. This presents a problem, doesn't it? Tell me, Yaburama, if this girl is with the Kage Demon Slayer, whom I imagine Hancho also sent after the scroll, how are we going to acquire it without losing an entire village's worth of demons? The Oni bared its fangs.
I'll take care of him.
No. You've done quite enough. The Oni snarled, looming over the woman. But Lady Satomi actually turned away from him and gazed at the scattering of crows on the walls and in the dead trees overhead. Hear me! She called, raising one hand, and the feathered creatures stirred, ruffling wings and raising their heads, gazing down with beady eyes. Find them, my Karasu! Satomi ordered. The girl and the Kage Demon Slayer! Be my eyes! Seeing where I cannot, and show me what I am dealing with. Go! The crows took wing with a cacophony of harsh cries, spiraling into the air and disappearing into the dark. Lady Satomi watched them go, a dark swarm flying into the roiling clouds, before turning back to the heaving, growling Oni. A temper tantrum is not becoming, Yaburama, she commented, and opened her parasol as drops of rain began to fall. You had your chance and failed. If the girl and the demon slayer are traveling close to towns, an Oni dropping in with a mob of Amanjaku is not going to go unnoticed. And I would like to keep the headaches to a minimum until I have the scroll in my hands. There are others I can call upon to take care of this. She pondered a moment, twirling the parasol in her hands. Kazekira and her disgusting familiar still owe me a favor, she mused. And they won't draw the eye of every soul in the area. Yes, I think that will work. She glanced at the Oni, and her voice became sweet and crooning. There now, Yaburama, the problem has been dealt with. You just stay here. Like a good dog, until I have need of you again. For a moment, Suki thought the Oni might spring forward and tear the head from Satomi's slim white neck. But then, he let out a snort and stepped back.
Fool mortal! You underestimate the Kage Demon Slayer. He may look human, but he is a worse monster than I am. Remember this when you need my protection from his sword.
Satomi raised a perfectly arched brow. I'll keep that in mind. She turned and strolled away, back toward the castle doors, parasol bobbing behind her. At the steps, however, she paused and looked directly at the place where Suki was hiding, a small smile crossing her lips. Chilled. The soul that had been Suki winked out of sight, becoming invisible. By the time she gathered the courage to peek out again, the woman was gone.
10. The Road to the Capital. We were being followed.
Tatsumi-san?
Yumiko turned, as I paused in the middle of the trail and turned to stare at the trees behind us.
What are you looking for?
Is something there? I didn't answer. Around us, large ancient pines grew close together, branches stretching over the path and mottling the trail with shade. Cicadas buzzed, their droning song pulsing.